and welcome to the first of 2004's Burst live streaming events. My name's Harry, and with me in the studio are Henry.
Hello there.
Caroline.
Good afternoon.
And Pete.
Pleasure to be here, Harry.
And if you've got any comments, please email us at studio@burst.co.uk. Coming up today on Burst Live, we've got a news summary, review and review show, and look at the changes to the nightlife down here in Bournemouth. First up, the newspapers. Henry, what's been troubling you?
I'm looking here, there's all the newspapers have the football on the front. I'm looking at the Independent here. We've got David Beckham looking a bit disappointed, walking off. Flick to the back. Zidane's double dose of magic spells heartbreak for England. And I think this is written by a movie person rather than a football correspondent. He starts off by talking about it's part of Lord of the Flies trilogy, and says it had a Hitchcockian finish as France came through the shower curtain to thrust a dagger into English hearts. I think that's a bit poor, personally.
It's a little bit of poetic license, always lovely.
Used to be Simon Carr on the back pages of The Independent in the good old days, and he was quite entertaining, but I suppose you have to have the football now.
I don't really think that review would go down too well in The Sun or The Star. No, quite interesting if you mix them up.
Hitchcock used to play for Chelsea, was it? Goalkeeper back in the day. We've got a heatwave coming up, saying on page 20. It's 24 yesterday in Heathrow, and they expect 30 degrees by the end of the week. Can't beat talking about the weather. And the cricket, which I thought was the great sporting achievement for England over the weekend, is only on page 54. And there's a whitewash for the first time in, was it 26 years? Yesterday was a great day's cricket. I was there on Saturday, didn't see much of the cricket, actually. I just saw the Barmy Army misbehaving and irritating the stewards. But it's a bit of a disappointment they don't focus more on that.
I personally find the cricket very, very boring to watch on television. Is any different when you're watching it live?
If you go and watch it live and you go to the right stand, so if you go to Trent Bridge and you go to the Fox Road stand, you don't see any of the cricket. I missed every single wicket. I saw a few boundaries, but you go there to see the mischief which is going on in the stands. Everyone in fancy dress. There was one guy dressed as Elvis, and there were 18 Pierluigi Colinas, and they were quite clever guys, I think. I think they were probably reunited from university or something.
But Colina, of course, is the bald Italian referee.
Yeah, the one with scary eyes.
Right.
But one of the referees asked Elvis, who view him as mate, expecting a witty reply. And Elvis looks like he's thinking up a clever response. Then after about 5 seconds, he said, Elvis. main entertainment in the crowd was cup stacking. You have lots of plastic cups for the beer. And somebody, a good-natured person, had stacked them up to help clear the stands. And one steward took a dislike to this, so confiscated it. So straight away, people who were actually right next to us started stacking the cups. And it was about a 6 foot or 8 foot stack of cups. And one steward ran over and confiscated that. And everyone just started singing that we're having a laugh and we're drinking some beers and having a laugh.
very, very intelligent humor.
Are you saying basically that going to a cricket match is like going to a public school?
A public school stroke public house.
Fantastic.
But the cricket really gets in the way. And if you're sat in the middle, you can't really go to the bar that often or go to the toilets that often. You really look forward to the tea break or lunch break so that you can carry on enjoying yourself. But if you watch the cricket, to be honest, Saturday was a bit disappointing, a bit dull. And you need to take your mind off it by fooling around. But they don't report that in the newspapers, of course.
Bringing it back to the newspapers.
Thought hits defiant ton to complete whitewash.
Pete, what's been catching your eye?
Well, I had the Sun. I'm looking at the Sun, and unsurprisingly, football dominates. And the Sun, patriotic to the last, even though England lost the game, they've got Frank Lampard celebrating his goal on the front cover, and on the back, they've got him scoring his goal. There's no pictures of the France players celebrating or the France players scoring or the French players doing anything good.
Did they not write at 89 minutes or 90 minutes? just send it off to be published?
Well, they did actually have a review of all ratings out of 10 for all the players, and unsurprisingly for the Sun, the England players were getting 8s and 9s out of 10, and the French players were getting 6 and 7.
Well, continuity seems to be the way with the Sun. You
yes.
didn't expect any
yes.
different.
Indeed. And lots of pictures of the St George's flag, with every town, village and pub all over the country represented.
So I quite like that. I don't know about you, but I've always kind of liked that sort of thing. I'm making a national symbol local. I always thought it was quite a neat little way of A, showing, you know, that you're there on the TV cameras. It's a big way of waving and saying, hello, mum. But it is a kind of, I suppose, England United thing.
If you went to watch England, would you have a St George's flag with Wiltshire respect or something like that?
Of course I would. I'd be wearing a shirt over it, but I would have it.
Underneath, close to your heart, sweetheart.
Absolutely.
Close to your heart.
So on.
In other news, some reporter went to the hostel where the British schoolgirl Caroline Dickinson was raped and murdered, and managed to freely walk around inside without checking in, and they even picked up a bedroom key. So just kind of saying that security is awful. The headline is, I walked into Caroline Hostel, sat on bed, and no one challenged me. So another scoop for the Sun there. And also, teenager tales of drug and sex romp, how John Leslie plied me with coke and begged for a bonk. And she was gutted and felt used when Leslie didn't return her texts.
It's good to see that Ron Seal journalism is still alive and well. You do get exactly what he says on the tin.
Indeed.
Yeah. Caroline, what do you reckon of the days, last couple of days?
Well, actually, surprisingly, mine went against the tide. I have the Daily Express in front of me, and unlike all the rest of the newspapers with the England defeat swarmed across the front page, mine seem to have relegated it to pages 4 and 5, and the lead on the front page seems to be the face of the illustrious Kilroy streaming back at me, which, you know, I've just had lunch, love. You know, put it away. But anyway, it's all about the British UK Independence Party and their huge landslide win for, well, not win, but definitely success in the Euro elections. It's following on from that. You've also got in the right-hand corner how you can be a sex goddess in, I don't know, 5 minutes, the usual. And they dedicated a double-page spread to how to shape up your wardrobe for the summer. And I think, you know, good advice there for all, I suppose. I'm not quite sure. Sure, it tells you how to dress if you're a pear shape, apple shape, whatever the shape. Highly interesting. And on the left-hand corner, you've got a picture of England Hell with an exclamation mark and a small George's flag. Not really much dedication to the England losing match at all. Then it follows on from that. We've got Brucey calls it a day. That is, the TV veteran Bruce Forsyth is set to quit at the end of the current BBC hit show Strictly Come Dancing, stating that he's exhausted. For the rest of the newspaper, we've got a double-page spread and in the inside on Sean Stewart. That is Rod Stewart's son, how he seems to have gone a little bit wayward and how Rod Stewart has decided to either cut him off unless he cleans up his act. Of course, he's been in drug rehabilitation, Alcoholics Anonymous. He's quite a good-looking guy.
How about his son?
Well... Oh, Henry. Quite true. There seems to be like father-like son, but apparently Rod's having none of it. He wants his son to clean up his act, and so much so that he's now working for $5 an hour in a video store when poor Roddy baby is in like a multi-million pound mansion, surviving on a mere...
$7 an hour.
Yes, exactly. With a cook and a cleaner and a chauffeur and everything. So I don't know how far that's going to go. For the rest of the Express, it seems to have just covered up everything nicely. We've got a nice two-page spread on the Royals, something for everyone about the young blue bloods coming to join the ranks with the Queen and Prince Philip waving from their lovely balcony. But in general, quite a sombre affair. Not really, not ready with the George's flag emblazoned everywhere, which is a bit of a contrast from everyone else's.
Well, the Express have always done something slightly different anyway, haven't they? I've just grabbed a copy of The Guardian here, and again, sort of front page is UKIP gains from voter backlash, big thing. You know, Kilroy obviously being the spearhead of this this wonderful separatist movement that we've got going on. Also managed to drag several other C-list celebrities in on the fight, and it seems they actually have a couple of council seats, which is scary. Independent inquiry into the Gulf War syndrome is being called. Finally, we're hopefully going to get some sort of legal challenge on this. The MOD is going to have to answer for what drugs they pumped into try and make sure that the troops didn't catch botulism or whatever the Iraqis tried to release in the first Gulf War. And a safety alert on the adult use of antidepressants. Just a couple of months ago, we had warnings that UK doctors were over-prescribing antidepressants to kids. And now it seems that literally no one is safe. These drugs are not a good thing for anyone.
But I think, in a way, that's generally, in many practices, that seems to be quite busy. Doctors quite willing to write a prescription, but to sit down and talk to their patient for 15 minutes when they have a queue out the door.
It would screw up your waiting lists,
yeah,
and
exactly.
It would. Yeah.
So bring on the Prozac and cut the queues.
Hell yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you there.
That's
if
all
you
right.
were in a flow.
No, carry along.
This is Best.
Right, coming up next, we've got reviews of recent live events as well as one from back in the day.
Right, well then I'll take off this part, I'll carry on now. We've got Incubus. Now, Incubus could be arguably one of the US's greatest and most influential bands at the moment. I say at the moment when they've actually been going for 13 years. They're made up of Brandon Boyd, Michael Ensinger, DJ Kilmore, Ben Kenny and Jose Palales II. Now, naturally enough, if I have got any of those pronunciations wrong, or all of them, please let me know at studio@burst.co.uk. I need to be corrected. Anyway, carrying on, the Incubus are in the UK since mid-May, doing a UK tour of most of the UK cities, promoting their new album, A Crow Left of the Murder. Now, this is following up of their most influential albums. That would be Pardon Me and Make Yourself. Now, Incubus have actually been going for quite a while. Their back catalogue is quite extensive, and most of these would probably be just released in the US, and they're quite difficult to come across here in the UK. But they are, as I said, a very influential band and have got a strong following here. They were one of the first bands to actually incorporate scratching and deck usage in rock music, which has actually been followed up, as you can see, quite popularly with Linkin Park today. I don't know, some people seem to think it's a good thing, some don't, but arguably it does work with Incubus and their style. They are innovators, not and motivators. They're not really ones to sit on the laurels.
Do you think they were influenced at all by the kind of mid-80s hip-hop bands such as Run DMC and Public Enemy, who would use rock music in their sets? And Run DMC collaborated with
Aerosmith.
Public Enemy and Anthrax.
Well, they have said that before, that music has influenced them, but I think they're major strong. I mean, everything goes back to the rock. Even at the gig, it was kind of seen as a scratching, and everything was just, it was an extra thing. It was like sprinkles on top of an ice cream. Basically, everything was the rock. Their main influences would have been Soundgarden and all the Seattle bands of that era, Nirvana and Pearl Jam. They obviously, that did feature into it, but it all comes down to the rock. More so, I think, in their second album that they released in the UK, was there is a heavy feature of scratching in there, but it's mainly rock. It's kind of like a byproduct. The thing is, at the gig, they kind of like DJ Kilmore. He kind of had a token song all to himself, and it was like, oh bless, look at him go. Whereas most of the time, it was taken over by the drums, and what a drum kit, absolutely huge. The bass player and the guitars and the singer, they all got in there, and he was in the background on this little soapbox playing away with himself. So it was always the rock, number one. But the gig itself, I would say 5.5 on the energy Richter scale. It was nuts from the very word off. Now, unfortunately, I missed their support band, 100 Reasons. Now, you can back me up here, lads. I'm sure that a band who have to put a number in the name of their band, I've yet to come across one that's actually hands up in the air better than, I mean, Blink-182, terrible.
Five.
Jurassic 5.
Okay, cut down. You had time to think of
just
this.
Just thought of that then. Just came to me then. Sorry, it took me a while.
Aside from Jurassic 5, I'm telling you.
I think that's the only one.
That's the only one.
S Club.
S Club 7. Right, I'll give you that one too, Henry. Just because it's you, okay? But yeah, so I missed the support band. It was in the pub, so I think I had the best time. It's quite strange when the music came on. I got completely separated from all my mates. I was literally kind of half picked up by a group of no shirt on sweaty guys who tried to like crowd surf me. I was having none of it because I've been crowd surfed before and being dropped on your head and just being forgotten about and trampled on. Not a good thing. But it was absolutely amazing. They opened up with their first track from their new album, Megalomaniac, which I think is a very, very social responsive song. The general feel from their new album is that the band is pissed off. They are pissed off with the world. They're pissed off with world politics. They're pissed off with man's inhumanity to man. And that comes through with all the lyrics on the songs. They are angry. They're back to basics. Incubus became quite famous on both sides of the Atlantic with Drive from Come Make Yourself, that album, which is kind of a, it's a happy-go-lucky song with a little bit of a beat in it. It's cool. Everyone liked it. But this is rip-roaring, in-your-face, slap on both cheeks. And I think it's time you actually heard it. So here we go. This is Megalomania from their new album. What is the new album? A Crow Left of the Murder. The gig was amazing. CIA needs more air conditioning. Cardiff Arena, amazing. Oh, God. I'm just going to sit back and listen. Lovely. Enjoy yourselves, lads.
Best.
Right, fantastic. Okay, switching tracks slightly. Henry, recently, you went to a gig as well, didn't you? It's a little bit different to that one.
It's true. I went to Ministry of Sound on the 29th of May 2004 to see my two favourite DJs, or basically my favourite DJ and his partner, music partner, called Masters at Work. They're made up of Kenny Dope and Little Lou Vega. Little Lou Vega's very intelligent way of mixing all types of music together. Well, not rock or happy hardcore, but Latin music, house, jazz, disco, techno. And I've been looking forward to this for a long time. It was at Soul Heaven, and it was a 9-hour set. I turned up at 11 o'clock and had to wait a while to get in. Massive queues. I think the capacity is about 2,000 to 3,000 people. They didn't actually start playing till 12:30. The main room, the doors opened. Amazing sound system. It's done up like a dome, and there's mesh on the walls. I think for, I don't know, resonance, harmony, to get absolutely right. And basically, they played lots of my favourite tunes, but on a system which I'll never be able to afford unless I do well in radio. Which,
moving swiftly onwards.
But yeah, it was really cool when they started out, because they had the DJ booth was absolutely packed. It was like that was where the party was going on, and lots of really glamorous looking dancers, and maybe their boyfriends came in too, which would be big bodybuilders. They started off playing low tempo, minimalist house, which really sets the tone. And it reminds me of music which used to be played at a place called Paradise Garage, which is basically where house music was born. Then, disappointedly, some old guy started DJing. I think it was Kenny Dope's dad, it looked like him. Or some random, I didn't...
Family affair.
No one really knew who he was. Masters at Work, they are DJs, don't just play music. They're always fiddling around with it. They're always using the mixer. Always layering it with a different remix or something. They're working flat out, and this was supposed to be 9 hours of doing that. But the first guy was just playing the tunes, which maybe was a little bit disappointing. It was standard soulful house, a lot better than you hear at most places, but it didn't really lead anywhere until Little Lou Vega came back on. Again, he's adventurous enough to play nothing but Latin beats. No bass line, no saxophones or anything. This is different, the tune you're hearing at the moment. But he can play that for 4 or 5 minutes, and it really gets people into a trance, as that type of music does. Then, when people became a bit dull, bored of that, he went on to playing some house classics like Lil Louis, French Kiss, and the house music anthem, an old Chicago tune from the 1980s. And then the music became monotonous again. That's probably my voice is for me listening. But he suddenly changed it and started playing some extraordinary camp disco, which, if you have 1,500 people who are all sort of moving at the same time into music, and you know, most of them probably on stimulants, so most of them are really tired, they need something to pick them up, and everybody just went nuts to the camp disco. Then, when I thought things could get better, they announced that there was a special DJ who was going to play for us tonight, who is called Jazzy Jeff. You might know from Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Will Smith.
He was the one who always got thrown out by Uncle Phil at the end, wasn't he? Thrown out the
right.
Door. You just see him flying out.
From
the mansion where they lived.
Fresh Out. Prince Bel-Air.
Bel-Air, sorry, yeah.
I'm aware of the programme. I've seen it on the box once or twice. but he was going to be... We were at the back of the hall, and basically Jazzy Jeff was then playing right where we were. So that was cool. Except for... When he did start to play the music, it was all the tunes I've heard before, like Rapper's Delight, Another One Bites the Dust. Good tunes, everyone knows them, but we've all heard them before. And it's the kind of music you can hear in wedding receptions or, you know, that kind of thing, except for he does mix the music well. And there was also an MC along. And the good thing about house music is that you can just lose yourself in the music, not to sound too hippie here, but you do lose yourself to the music. You're just dancing and just sort of the music, you and the music become one and stuff. It's a bit different to hip-hop, where it's more...
conscious.
Yeah, sort of shaking your ass and all that kind of...
but watching yourself.
If there's mirrors. But I'm always really self-conscious when there's an MC and he's shouting out, come on everybody, everybody in the house go yeah, because I know I haven't got a voice like from Brooklyn. So my voice I think is better suited to not to sound poncy, but...
At the cricket.
At the cricket, yeah, I can get away. I can get, come on, England, and sort of put a bit of a rough edge to it if I want to. But not sort of everybody in your house go, yeah, I'm sort of standing out with a sore thumb there.
Have you got that terrifying fear that actually it'd be the one time when no one else did say yeah?
And you're like, yes!
I feel like an embarrassing dad at school disco. So, yeah, he wasn't as fun as possible. Then the music went back on to Lil Louis, and he played some... the tunes which I really liked was, there was a George Benson one called The Ghetto, and the guitars on that sound system, that was a really powerful moment for me. I love George Benson, and just hearing it there and then, when I'm tired, you don't care. It's, as I said, at one with the music. I'd forgot to, when I went in, I forgot to take my jacket off, and I was wearing my corduroy jacket, and I was wearing a shirt. They said you can wear club wear, you can wear whatever you like, so I was wearing jeans and trainers and this jacket, and I was sweating like a madman. I was looking really out of place, and I was actually told by someone, you look like the most out of place person here, which made me feel great.
A nightmare come true.
Yeah, but once I cooled down a bit, the nightclub sort of it emptied out, and I ended up staying till about 8 in the morning. They played some more of my favourite disco tunes, layered on top of house versions, and I left them playing Teddy Pendergrass featuring Harry Melvin and the Blue Notes, and Don't Leave Me This Way.
Time to go.
So did you actually dance for the full 8 hours?
I danced about 6 hours. Yeah, because I think around the area, between 3 and 6, it's at Elephant and Castle, you shouldn't leave the club. Basically, it's safer being in the club, surrounded by lunatics dancing, than being out there and just being...
It's surrounded like, by lunatics not dancing.
Well, it's like hyenas when you get out. They're all after you. They want your money. But they want your money in there as well. It was £17 for 3 Red Bulls and 3 waters. Felt like crying. I kept on getting the drinks in. I kept on feeling a bit bad about that. But all in all... It's definitely worth the money, and I'd recommend next time that Masters at Work come to the UK.
Get there.
Definitely. You'll enjoy yourself.
Superb.
Something for everyone.
Bring your granny.
Yeah, so Pete, you actually went to a gig quite a while back now that would you reckon would beat this?
I think it probably would, yeah. It's gone down in Glastonbury folklore. The band in question were Orbital, and as you may or may not know, Orbital are playing their last ever gig together at Glastonbury this year, 2004. So it's quite apt, really, that it's exactly 10 years after this gig I went to at Glastonbury, 1994.
Are you going to get along this year?
Unfortunately not,
oh,
no.
No,
a little bit too old and broke, I think, really. I like my Creature Comforts. But, yeah, it was one of the great Glastonbury performances. And it was 10 years ago, which makes me feel old, but it's the kind of thing that it does crop up in conversation when I talk to my friends who are also there, so the memories are relatively fresh. I always found Glastonbury to be quite a spiritual place, not just because of the green field and the healing field, but because it's set in a valley and at night there's lots of campfires, and it really does have a kind of like out of space feel to it, almost like an Ewok village or something. And Orbital's melodic electronica feels perfect for this vibe, for this mood. The gig itself was the first time that the Hartnell brothers, who make up Orbital, had worn the glasses with the torches attached to each
best.
Lens.
Everyone wanted a pair of those. Those were the best things ever.
Did you have a pair, Harry?
Nope.
Any homemade efforts?
I gave it a go,
actually. Super gluing the torches on?
Oh, not super glue, no. But, yeah, a couple of bits of sellotape, a couple of pen lights. Wicked.
Nice. So it actually meant that even though I was quite far back in the crowd, you could clearly make the brothers out, dancing manically behind their machines. The gig itself, the band started off playing tracks from the soon-to-be-released Snivelization album, so we were the first people to hear tracks off this album. Went down really well, but just when you kind of felt that the audience wanted to hear something that they knew, something they could recognise, they dropped in Impact, which is one of the great Orbital tracks off the second album. So this kicked in, the crowd went nuts, there was lasers being beamed into the sky and onto the crowd, and images from around the world were manically flashed up on big screens, like pictures of politicians and pop stars, and it was all quite crazy, lots and lots going on. The band would bring the beats to a close while the familiar sound loops would fly around the night sky. And looking into the crowd, it seemed like everyone was sharing some kind of euphoric sense of well-being. Strangers embracing each other and people raising their hands in the air.
Do you think that was all the music?
I think it could well have been the music, yeah. It was a real kind of special euphoric vibe. And then the beats would kick back in, and Orbital's beats are really kind of mechanical, almost like gunfire, so a complete contrast with the lush sort of ambient loops that they use. So the crowd would go absolutely ballistic, jumping up and down, just dancing like nutters. I can't remember too much about the running order of tracks and what was played, but they definitely ended the gig by playing Chime, which is the track you can hear in the background, and it's their biggest hit from way back in 1990. They actually got on Top of the Pops with this tune when kind of house music, dance music was in its infancy. And so they played this, went down very, very well. Then they went off after immense cheering and clapping. Orbital returned for one more song, which was Are We Here? Which again was off the Snivelization album, so we hadn't heard it before. But it just kind of, it seemed to fit the whole sort of out of space spiritual vibe. In the track, there's lots of strange samples, people talking about whether or not we are alone in the universe. And the final sample and last thing to come out of the mix, last thing you heard in the gig was a voice saying, "What does God say?" Which kind of seemed to sum it all up, really. It's brilliant, fantastic gig, really pleased and privileged to have been there. And even at the time, it felt really special, and we sort of knew that it would go down in history. And yeah, it is a shame that I'm not going to be going to
close the cycle almost.
Yes, indeed.
But your children can.
I don't have any children.
Future generations.
Well, they're folding. This is their last gig.
Oh. So do you think
have some children, quick.
Their children.
Do you think, like, there seems to be an awful lot of high-profile artists out there quitting recently? Well, not quitting, but entering the retiring stage.
Right.
Like Jay-Z and the producer Timbaland and now Orbital. They're saying they're making way for younger artists. Do you think that's, like...
No.
Shouldn't it be, like, natural musical evolution? That if you're good enough, you'll get to the front.
I think they just want to end at the top.
Yeah.
Really, and they don't want to be past it, because... The Hartnell brothers, who make up Orbital, they are quite old.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're in their 40s, but they're certainly approaching 40.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, just end at the top, go out with a bang, go out on a high.
Do you see anyone being able to take their place? Well, at least in their league. What would you put in their league?
Well, in their league, I would put the Chemical Brothers and Underworld, because they're, you know, it's stadium
they
dance
are,
music.
They are stadium dance music people.
Basically, and back around sort of 94, 95, the Orb were also rivals to them. Playing similar kind of ambient techno. Easily and confused, yeah. Wonder who came up with the name first.
Who could say? I haven't been to a gig for ages, so I can't talk about that, but I did go to see a play the other week down
Ooh.
In Bristol. Yes.
How flutant.
I know.
Yeah, dead cultural me. yeah, no, it's down at a little theatre called the Tobacco Factory, so just south of the river in Bristol, and it's the artistic director there, Andrew Hilton, formed the company about 5 years ago, and they bring together a fantastic array of local talent, because before there wasn't really a great deal going on in Bristol in terms of professional drama. They've succeeded in putting out 10 wonderful plays. They do two each spring in this period, and... Just a couple of weeks ago, I popped along to see the latest production, which is The Changeling by Middleton and Rowley. It's the first time they haven't done a Shakespeare one. They wanted to sort of broaden it out to encompass other Jacobean tragedians. That didn't move too far. It was written in 1622 and probably first performed in 1624, they think. The main play is set in Alicante in 1622, and it's to do with a duke's household. His daughter, Beatrice Joanna, is engaged to a nobleman who's in favour with her father, but she falls in love with another one. She then plots with this guy, De Flores, who's a really greasy, nasty piece of work. He's been lusting after her for years, ghosting around her father's house, sort of chasing her and trying to grab her. And that was played fantastically by this guy called Rupert Ward Lewis, who's done an awful lot of theatre and is moving into TV and radio as we speak, almost. And... She plots with him anyway, he's totally obsessed with her, and he'll do anything for her. And so she asks him to kill her fiancé so she can marry her new love, who's called Alcimiro. That's the main plot, but there's also a subplot which is based in a madhouse where the old warden has just taken a young wife, and she's being pursued by two young gentlemen from the house of Alsamara also. I mean, just everyone seems to want everyone to stand a Jacobean, chase them around the houses, dress up, pretend you're someone else. It's wonderful stuff. I read the play at uni, and I didn't really get it. It's sort of, you've got the two bits are so totally distinct, there's almost no junction point between the two plots. So what they've done in this production is they've rewritten, they've actually written an entire new scene to actually bring the two together a bit, and they've rejuggled the running order slightly just so it hangs together. And it does really work quite well. I actually could sit there and go, oh, yeah, oh, I see, I gotcha. It's great. And especially in the space that they've got in this theatre, it's they've gone back to the whole thing of having the stage in the centre and having the audience all around. So really they've got nowhere to hide, and they've got, and it negates the need for any sort of extensive set dressing. You've got the odd bit of furniture carried on by the cast as they come in. Just really good old-school theatre done by a lot of good old-school actors, some of whom are actually, you know, pretty young. But, I mean, they're associated with the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, and I think that's what's really, you know, pushed them up there, is they're getting constant new talent and source of volunteers as stagehands and front-of-house people. And, I mean, as I say, they just completed this sort of, you know, communist-sounding but five-year plan to actually get from nothing to a regularly producing theatre company. And their reward for this is they've got a five-week run at, where was it?
The Barbican?
That's the one, yes. You heard me
it's
talking
about
it.
It's a very, very professional theatre. Huge.
It is. I mean, there's a great worry that
they'll get swallowed.
They'll get swallowed. I mean, but luckily it is, the company is hopefully going to stay together. I mean, because you don't want people to get poached. And, okay, no. Every actor knows you have to do London every now and again, you know, for at least a small amount of time, pay your dues. But it would be a terrible shame to break up this company.
But the theatre in Bristol is alive and well. It's not been swamped, and it is being nurtured, as you said, by the students there from the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. Mm. So there is a definite link there and an anchor. So I don't see... I would definitely believe that there will be a... There's a place for them in Bristol. There's a place for them.
Oh, there is, yeah. And the Tobacco Factory, as I say, is a great place. I mean, if you ever get a chance, springtime, they do two Shakespearean plays. Get down there, get to Bristol.
Do you think that the innovation that they did with that play, would you think that will work with Shakespeare? Because Shakespeare is so well known, do you think that, well, I suppose Shakespeare doesn't really need it, whereas perhaps that Jacobean play did?
Well, I mean, a lot of producers, I mean, every producer attempts to rejig Shakespeare every now and again.
Leave their stamp.
But, I mean, weirdly enough, in one of the broadsheet newspapers, when they were reviewing The Changeling, they actually quoted directly from the scene that was written... Not by Middleton and Rowley, but by the company at the Tobacco Factory. They directly quoted as if it was part of the original. That's how well integrated it was, and that's how much sense it made. But it's a lot easier with Middleton and Rowley because their language is a lot more workaday. It's not hasn't got quite so many highfalutin bits and bobs as the Shakespeare has.
Bits and bobs. I'm going to put that in my next English essay.
Bells and whistles.
Let's get technical with the English language. Bits
Absolutely.
And bobs. Well, thank you very much for Harry. What do we have up next, Pete?
Next up, we have a little piece I've made about nightlife in Bournemouth.
Oh, yeah, you went out armed only with a microphone and a lingering sense of self-worth, didn't you?
Lingering, yes.
Unleashed yourself on the people of Bournemouth.
Let's
Bournemouth
hear it.
Has long been thought of as Britain's premier seaside town for old people. Retirement homes, bowling greens, deck chairs, tea shops and blue rinses were aplenty. Lee Evans, in his stand-up comedy routine, used to say that even the windows were bifocal and that it's not called Bournemouth, but it's called...
I said Bournemouth!
But according to the Quality Press... The town has reinvented itself as a town for young people who have renamed it BOMO. It now boasts 16 nightclubs and is said to seriously rival Brighton as the South Coast's clubbing destination. So is this the case? I asked some locals what they thought about BOMO.
Probably over the past 5 years it's changed quite a lot. You can feel there's more sort of students and younger people around.
It's literally like spot the old person. Never see any old people, really.
It's more geared up for a younger person now, with the nightlife really bringing younger people into town.
I mean, when I first came over here, there was a lot of people that used to come down from up north for seasonal jobs. I think that still happens. You know, people that like to work on the beach or in bars for the season. But you also get quite a lot of students down here now as well. So as the university's grown, I think that's probably another area that's expanding. It's mainly just drinking, and I suppose the beach, it brings sort of out the lighter side in people, and everyone just probably seems to get drunk, fall over and enjoy themselves.
I think particularly there's been a surge of money into Bournemouth in the last couple of years, and it's becoming more and more, certainly in the summer, a young people's resort. In fact, I think it's probably right up there with Blackpool now as quite a live and happening resort. Well, there's all the beaches. There's 7 miles of beaches, which obviously attract their own amusements and various things like boating and amusement arcades and sightseeing and that sort of thing. And there's also numerous bars and clubs within the town centre itself.
Mostly drink, enjoy themselves in many of the pubs and clubs around the town centre.
I think it's catered a lot for it for students and stuff, but I don't know. Yeah, I'd say it's good. I mean, enjoy going out in Bournemouth. It's just that, you know, it's pretty much the same as everywhere.
Go, 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 go on, love. It's my birthday. You look tarty, love. It's my birthday. I'll buy you a Bacardi, love. It's my birthday. And you know I'm having a laugh. It's not my birthday.
They're very much geared to the open market, so they tend to be sort of quite commercial bars and clubs. So I mean, particularly you see during the summer you see lots of stag and hen weekends coming down because of the sort of commercial aspect of the bars.
Drunk students mostly, and hen and stag nights, chain bars, lots of chain bars, pretty much the same as you'd find in any other town.
I'd say it's much of a muchness. I think it's like every town in the country. If you're going to go out of town, that's where you're going to get like big chain bars and, you know, big fights at half 11 or whatever.
A lot of Charty House, the odd beef for tunes. Yeah, just pop mostly. Pop. There's a few bars that might have different stuff, but not very many.
It's a bit lacking, really. There's nothing sort of structured to it. You just sort of hit the main town centre and you know, and go. I'd say there probably could be a lot more done. One, two, three.
It's not really got the originality that you'd find in places like Brighton, where you've got the independent bars and clubs with lots of variety. You don't find any such variety in Bournemouth.
Trash. Crap. Just a heap of loud noise, no music, no rhythm, but, you know, enough alcohol.
Oh, just all, you know, popular dance music, all that kind of stuff. There are places to do the odd night, don't they? But not that often.
Again, it's probably pretty much commercial stuff. I mean, there's a particular club in Bournemouth that plays like only 80s music, and then there's other clubs that just play chart music. You can get more sort of more specific music types, but then those tend to be actually geared more towards the local market, maybe the students or the or like on a monthly basis. And they're a sort of ticket-only thing, so those tend to be, yeah, sort of more commercial for those visitors that might come down for the weekend, and then it's a more sort of knowledgeable audience that would get more of a specific music type, like house or dance or something like that.
Whoa! Are you smoking crack,
Mike,
or something?
Just leave it, just leave
we
it.
We cannot have that behaviour in this establishment.
It's not worth it, Mike. Just leave
don't
it.
Touch me.
It's not worth
don't
it.
Touch me. Don't touch me. Look, I'm all right. Don't touch me.
It's not a pretty place. It's, well, because there's so few places it'll stay open, basically everyone gets chucked out at the same time, so you've got a lot of drunk stag and Hindus starting trouble or other things.
Alcoholics, drunks, people on the street at 2 a.m. making nonsense.
Starting trouble or getting it on in public, in the park probably, in the streets, wherever they feel like it.
It's absolutely horrendous, particularly in the summer, obviously, when you've got the stag and hen parties, and I, for one, just would avoid it like the plague. There's people, particularly you see fights breaking out over taxi ranks, fights breaking out over anything, queues in burger places, and you see people throwing up, you see people walking all over the road. I mean, you have taxis driving along and people are almost like trying to jump in front of the taxis to get them. It's just, it's complete carnage.
No, no, they don't behave themselves really. I think the council have put in security cameras along the beaches and in the gardens purely because there's so much vandalism and trouble, really. But that's probably drink and, you know, drink orientated, I would say.
Terry has been a club bouncer in Bournemouth for 17 years.
Very much the same sort of culture as you'd see abroad in the summer. Now we're starting to see that in the likes of Bournemouth and Newquay. It's becoming the same sort of culture over here. What I would term as alco-pops, Bacardi Breeze, as that sort of ilk. Shooters, it seems to be the latest craze for the last couple of years. Drinking very quickly, getting drunk as quickly as possible. There's a very good police presence in the town centre. They work very closely with the doorman. Between the police and the door staff, they have a great radio watch, so that a majority of any trouble is nipped in the bud very quickly, and it doesn't get a chance to escalate. I'd say it was under control, but it is down to the individual person. On a typical weekend, we'd probably see 3,500 to 4,000 people through the doors, and in that time, we'd probably be hard pushed to see 10 out of control people. As I said, the doorman and the police do keep a tight rein on the town and do keep it under control.
Clearly, Bournemouth has shaken off its old age pensioners tag and is an extremely popular place for people on stag or hen nights, or those who are seeking a commercial night of clubbing. It cannot really be seen as a South Coast rival to Brighton, as it caters for a different audience. So if you're thinking of heading to Bournemouth this summer, you'll be more likely to see a shot of aftershock than a blue rinse. Just don't expect any depth or variety in your entertainment, and be on full alert while queuing for a taxi.
This is Best.
Cheers, Pete. You seem to have come back alive, despite whatever else was saying.
Yeah, I'm still alive. I have to admit, my experience of Bournemouth is that when you do leave a club at sort of half two, there is just aggro on the streets and people looking to start trouble with you for no apparent reason.
When that bouncer was saying he'd be hard put to see 10 out of control people out of 3,500, 4,000, what is he talking about?
I think he was working, he was from a pub, wasn't he?
That was a bar, so a bar. That would presumably shut at 12
maximum at a weekend.
So it'd be later on that.
Yes.
In general, I mean, I work in a bar in town in Yates, in Bournemouth. Anywho, and mentioning no names, I'll get shot. But anyway, largely now there seems to be a huge kind of insurgence with binge drinking, and this incessant need to get as many shooters and shots down your throat in the smallest time possible.
But don't the places themselves really just promote that? I mean, you know, when you see the girls walking around, you know, with the racks of test tube shooters and say, go on, love, £2, there you go, go on, love.
That's quite true, yeah, and I'm sure I've probably done that myself.
What, walked around with the shooters?
Walked around with the shooters, yeah. I mean, I think... I think in a way it seems to be reflecting a mentality that among the youth that there is, you have to have everything right now and as much as possible. There's no such thing. I mean, if you ask them what drinks they had, they'd be like, I don't know, it's matted, or you know, it's just like loads of lager or whatever. It's like they can't they don't taste it. They
most
don't
people
taste
can actually,
the drink.
It seems to be the way that you measure a night though, when you talk to a lot of these people, is exactly by the numbers. I had 12 pints of lager, 14 shots of vodka, and they know exactly. I mean, they can remember each and every, you know, do they carve it on their arms as they're going along?
But hang on, I mean, it's add 10, add a zero, and you know, 30 points of Guinness, yeah,
and
right.
Times it by their shame.
But the thing is, I would say, from serving from behind a bar, the amount of guys that will actually, they're probably their biggest, we sell most of our alcohol pops to guys. Because what they do is, they just like put the straw in and just down them. And it's hilarious when
straw
you're like
pedo.
A big guy, a big burly guy, comes up to the bar and he orders 3 pink red squares, and you're like, okay then.
And a shot of pastis.
Exactly. And you just, I mean, the amount of times I just laughed in their face and says, would you know how to handle a pint of Guinness? I don't think so.
Just as well as that bar between the two of you. It doesn't matter if you're a girl, they're going to take you out anyway.
And what are they going to do? Meet me with their little umbrellas from the cocktail sticks?
That's true, actually, I suppose.
But I don't know. It seems to be, I would agree with Pete, from leaving a pub or a bar on a Friday and Saturday night, everyone's just matted. It's not a pretty sight, and it's not a nice way to look at humanity. If we had neighbours out there in planets and they were looking at us, and people not being able to stand and wobbling, I'm sure I've been like that many of the times, but it's just not a pretty sight.
An idea I've had, because I work in a pub in Oxford, and it's a good pub because, well, it's good for me because I work there and we don't have many drunks. People are enjoying.
It's more mature pub, though.
It is, but even with the students, people are enjoying themselves. They go, they have a few drinks, but they're enjoying themselves. And one convention we have at the pub is don't mix your drinks. And it's something, if someone's ordering Stella and then they want 4 pints of Stella and 4 ports, as people have asked, even though you could get money for the port, £4 for a port, for example, I'll turn it away and say, sorry, we don't believe in mixing drinks here. But by doing that, it's the mixing drinks which make people sick. It's mixing drinks which make
but
people
it's the
behave.
getting gatted on 12 pints of Stella and beating each other up.
But it will cut off quite a lot of the problems, I think, if people don't mix their drinks.
I think it's also an awful lot of responsibility as the people behind the bar. The amount of times that we have been told so much, and in the beginning I was quite frightened about it, going to tell someone who's ordered like their 10th pint and saying, no, you cannot have it, you're too far gone, please sit down with your friends, I'll give you a glass of water, if not, I'm going to get the bouncer over and you'll have to leave. Now, the unfortunate thing is that if that person does leave, they're just going to cause a problem for the next place they either get into or not get into, or they're going to be a problem on the street. But I think there is a very, very heightened awareness within the pub people working in pubs nowadays that they have the right and the duty to say, no, you cannot have any more. But yeah. We deal with them at an early on stage, like between 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. From then on, that you know, the foundations have been laid.
But how do you reckon we ought to deal with them after that?
Well, I don't know. My friend Neris came up with this idea when we were chatting about it in Cardiff after the Incubus gig, and we were saying that pub licensing laws, they were thinking of making them longer, so not to encourage binge drinking. Now, in Ireland, we had the licences quite open way later. You know, club doesn't necessarily have to let out until around 4 in the morning, pubs 1, and you still have problems. But what she came up with was that pubs should be told, you cannot start, you have to stop serving alcohol at 12, but you can still serve non-alcoholic drinks until 1 or 2 or whatever. You can continue on selling non-alcoholic drinks.
So that people sober up?
Not just that, but people go there, they can actually be encouraged to think of drink and the social outing of going to a bar, not just getting there, downing as much as you can, getting absolutely trashed off your face, to actually see it as a social thing. You're there to sit at a table, chat to your friends and listen to the music, whatever. And it doesn't necessarily have to be associated with the alcohol content of what you're drinking.
So it's all about changing attitudes. I mean, Pete, you were talking about this earlier, weren't you?
Yeah, I actually spoke to PC Ian Curtis, who had a novel idea about how to deal with the problem. Should we just have a listen to that?
Yeah,
no problem.
Let's go.
Could you just explain the scheme to me, please?
Yes, certainly. The scheme itself is very simple. What we've done, all of the Town Watch, Bournemouth Town pubs and clubs, got together and decided that it would be a good idea to give out Kit Kat or chocolate at the end of the evening so that people are leaving the premises a little bit happier, not so frustrated at queues for taxis and takeaways, and so that we can reduce the levels of violence.
And why chocolate?
Well, luckily, the national company involved has donated 7,500 packs, so obviously chocolate would have been our first choice. It's certainly been shown that the chemicals within chocolate has got a tendency to increase people's happiness, if you like. I think it's their serotonin levels are raised, and as they're leaving the club, they're given chocolate, which, incidentally, is given in a bag, so people have to use both hands in which to eat the said item, and therefore they're busy. It's a bit of a novelty value so that when they leave the club, they have something to talk about, to laugh about, and something to eat. And from the evidence that we have, it seems to have worked.
Right. In what way? Do you have any figures or...?
Yeah, we've had some analysis. We've done it over two bank holidays, bank holiday Saturdays, and it transpired that during our busiest period from about 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock, we had a 50% reduction in the number of violence incidences, initially outside the clubs and pubs involved.
Right. Would it not have been more effective to look at the kind of root of the problem, for example, getting the clubs to cut down on binge drinking?
Absolutely, and don't get me wrong, this is only one item in our ever-increasing toolbox, to use that overused phrase.
Right.
We have, this has come about due to the pubs and clubs getting together themselves. They have looked at minimum drinks pricing. There in Bournemouth you have a 150 minimum level, whereas there isn't any two drinks for one or drink as much as you can for £10. So we are tackling this on lots and lots of levels, and what this initiative has done also is highlighted the fact that the industry is doing as much as they can to reduce the problem as much as the police.
Right, and seeing as it did have such a positive influence, are there any plans to do this again? Could it be something that you did every weekend?
It would be if it wasn't so expensive. Obviously, we've done it on two weekends because we had the free chocolate from the national company, and the door staff gave it out, so it wasn't a police initiative as such. If we can get a local firm to sponsor us, or we can get another national company involved, then yes, we would like to do it, but I'd probably do it on specific weekends. Because I think if anybody was given chocolate on a regular weekend, it would take the novelty value away from it. So I think we would do it through intelligence-led policing.
Right. PC Curtis, thank you very much.
That's no problem.
Cheers. Thanks. See you later. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This is Best.
Well, there you go. We've got innovation throughout everywhere within Bournemouth to tackle this problem. If you have any opinions on anything that has been said today, or would just like to tell us how well, bad, stroke, brilliant we've done today, do let us know at studio@burst.co.uk. We'll be reading all your emails over the next week, keeping us all enthralled. You'll be listening to people tomorrow and for the rest of the week, and all next week, of course. But from us here today, that's Pete.
Thanks for listening.
And Harry.
Cheers, guys.
And Henry.
Soon.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you.
And, of course, me, Caroline Clark. We'll be seeing you all again next week. Until then, keep yourselves all nice and happy. And, again, we'll say we'll listen to all your comments over the week. Until then, thank you very much. And be very kind and listen to our friends on tomorrow. Bye now.